hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 71 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
Moi, je suis un bonhomme.
No.
That's Quebecois French for me, I am a snowman.
My no was correct. I didn't even know.
That was a good response. It's especially absurd because A, I'm not a snowman, and B, it's full on early summer here. All the leaves are out, all the bugs are dancing, and the birds are singing. And I don't know if bugs dance, but if they do, they'd be doing it now.
All right then.
Bees dance. Bees do that little sort of signal dance to let other bees know what's going on.
Yeah, no, here it's been doing the Portland spring thing where it's like, it's really nice and sunny and like in the 70s, and then the next day, here's some hail. This is normal in Portland, I swear to God. But anyway, so it's been a week. There's been some pop culture stuff. Now, and we'll start here just because we were just talking about it before we started recording. You haven't watched all of Riverdale.
Not all of nope. I'm in the midst of episode 9, the tree tapping ceremony one. So
right.
There, yeah.
Which has some of my favorite lines. And it's really where they recrank the Twin Peaks style.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's
the visuals in the episode are amazing. But I want to talk about Riverdale, not in terms of like, you know, what actually happens in Riverdale, all this. But I went back and I was like, oh, Riverdale, and I have some of the trades of the Mark Waid Archie reboot. And I was like, you know, I'm missing Riverdale. Let me reread some of this stuff. And it's good comics, don't get me wrong. Like, it's you know, updated, quote-unquote updated, in terms of it's more modern. It's less like, here's like an eight-page story that doesn't connect anything. Like, there are actually plot threads that pull through. You know, you get to know the characters internally better and all that. And it's Waid and Fiona Staples in the first arc. And it's really good stuff, but I find that I actually prefer the character dynamics in Riverdale.
Interesting.
Over the traditional Archie dynamics, even with the update stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's skewing my reading of it. It's like, the whole Betty and Veronica are kind of rivals thing is just, and like, you know, Veronica's a terrible person.
Yeah, Riverdale really sort of flipped that on its head really quickly. And it has changed the way I think about these characters.
Right,
I mean, even just having Betty and Jughead. I agree. Well, they're more interesting. That notion of the female rivalry between Betty and Veronica, I mean, these are rooted in ideas from, you know,
The
50s, exactly.
40s, hell.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, and, Lily Reinhart. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, yeah, go on.
Oh, Lily Reinhart as Betty, yes.
Yeah, in an interview, was asked what her view on Archie, you know, as an actress, not, you know, as Betty, and said, you know, he's the original fuckboy. Fuckboys invented 1941. And that sticks with me.
Oh, fuck, that's okay. Yeah.
Because she's
it's
right.
Not
I
what
mean,
I would expect.
In the original comics, like, he is totally a fuckboy.
Although that's absolutely not what I would expect to come, like, something that I would expect Lily Reinhart to say just because all I know of her is Betty. So I can just picture
you
Betty
should, you
saying,
should look at, like,
oh,
interviews with her and shit. She is hysterical and just gives no fucks in the exact right way.
It sounds like it, yes.
Yeah, someone, like, fat-shamed her on Twitter, like, you know, you should watch what you eat. It's like, you look at her, it's like, this is not a woman who needs to watch what she eats, but whatever. And she, like, posted this little video to Instagram, I think it was, someone just linked me to it, going about how, like, you know, that's terrible, you should eat whatever the fuck you want, and ends it, and she's, like, you know, in her car, and ends it with, you know, and bitch, I love my Taco Bell, and, like, is eating a burrito. And it's, you know, again, she's the Betty we need.
Maybe not the Betty we deserve, but definitely the one we need.
I think she's Betty we deserve, too, but... But yeah, no, it's the whole Riverdale, like the central line of, like, you know, Betty and Veronica, or in the show, is it just B and V being like basically soulmates.
Yes.
And just best friends from the get go, and ignoring the rivalry and just kind of building out this more. So, like I said, I don't know how I feel about the Betty and Jughead thing.
It's a thing. It doesn't feel necessary. I mean, I like it because I like Sprouse and Reinhardt.
Mm.
So having them sort of act off each other is good.
It does some good things.
Yeah, but it doesn't quite. I'm not quite convinced, I guess.
Yeah, no. And as you watch the rest of the season, you'll see that actually it does some really good things for the plot. It does some really good things for character.
Mm.
It kind of lets you hinge some motivation off of stuff that you would have to stretch for otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good for that, and it gets you some good character bits. I'm not against it from like a writing standpoint so much as just that's the bit I think that will take the longest for me to incorporate into my version of Jughead more than Betty.
Right.
And now, as it's been pointed out, you know, the whole Jughead now in text is asexual and aromantic. Yeah.
And Cole Sprouse has said in interviews that he would like that. Yeah.
And it would be an interesting direction to kind of have Jughead discover that, you know, in himself and come to terms with it. Given all this, that could be an interesting direction to go, and I kind of hope they do. But also, it was pointed out to a few people that, like, if you go back and look at the original, like, 40s Archie stuff for sourcing, there's a bunch of, like, you know, Jughead is pursued by a bunch of women always and, like, doesn't want them and all this, and this is where you get the asexual, aromantic angle from. But then also he said a few times in the comics, like, if he did go out with anyone, it'd be Betty. And that's where they're pulling their groundwork from.
That's really funny.
So, you know, it could be a journey to discovery. Again, I think that'd be really awesome. But just in terms of, like, how Betty and Veronica and how the version of Archie is, actually, I like the TV version. Even though Archie is, again, in all the stories, is kind of useless.
Yeah. Like, even they actually, one of the things I like about the new Archie comics is the way Mark Waid sort of kind of latched onto that almost immediately, that he was kind of clumsy and useless and sort of, yeah.
And they keep it in the show as well, whether or not they intentionally mean it. But yeah, no, I think I like the world of the show better than the comics.
Fair enough.
And like I said, I knew I liked the world of the show better than the original comics that I read as a kid, but I hadn't reread, and I hadn't been, you know, I don't read it monthly, and I hadn't reread any of the reboot, the Wade stuff in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so reading them, I'm like, I like this, but it fights with the version of Riverdale in my head, and I can't enjoy it quite as much.
I understand that completely.
So I feel almost a little bad for that, because I'm like, it's good comics, it's just, I want this other version now.
Yes. It's not Riverdale. It's good comics, just not Riverdale.
Right, and again, for me, it's all centered just like, we have finally have the best version of Betty and Veronica possible, I think. In terms of, you know, actor, and in terms of just writing-wise. It's like, I just don't want to give up on that.
And I also have to say, I think the thing that I was kind of wavering on Riverdale around about episode 6, to be honest with you. I was enjoying it, but it didn't pull me in every week. And then when I went back to it, I'm not sure what it was. I just felt like I think maybe I didn't care about Josie and the Pussycats' dad being such a jerk. I think maybe that was kind of like, eh, whatever. And then with the next episode, I sat down and I said, okay, I'll watch this. Or maybe it was episode 8. And they delved into the relationship between Jughead and his father.
Yeah.
And watching Cole Sprouse and Skeet Ulrich play scenes together. Just, whoa.
Yeah, right.
There's some strange noises going on. Can you hear them?
Nope.
I can. It's like this crazy static, like this ch-ch-ch-ch sound.
Ah, uh-oh.
Wait, there, it's gone away. There, it's gone. Sorry, I was just stopping because I was suddenly talking about Jughead and his dad, and I thought you suddenly started making weird, like, ch-ch-ch sounds with your mouth, and I'm like, that doesn't seem like a no. thing. That's not even a bit. What's going on? And then I was just like, okay, well, this call is screwed. Okay, we're back. We're back. Yeah, got Cole Sprouse and Skeet Ulrich playing off each other. That I thought that sold me again. I was once more invested in this whole show.
Yeah, there was Cole Sprouse mentioned, I forget what episode it is, but it's somewhere in like 7 or 8, I think, where he was like, this is like the slowest episode of the show because then the rest of the series just picks up again. Mm. As we kind of barrel to it, and that might have been the episode that kind of made you go, eh.
It might have been. I think there was a lot of soap opera stuff happening, but I didn't really see much else going on. And I was like, I know this is going to pick up again. It just sort of got shuffled down towards the bottom of the list of things I wanted to put in my eyes.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, for me, so far at least for this entire season, even when Riverdale was not its best version of itself, it was still just fun. You know, in that great, like, kind of Berlanti, overly dramatic, soap opera-y, but with, you know, the strange, unreal dialogue that he likes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, it was kind of overall fantastic. I mean, even not great Riverdale is still... really, really sort of addictive Riverdale.
Yeah. So, yay, Riverdale.
Riverdale. Also, I love that Cheryl Blossom, they just keep on feeding like the most over-the-top lines to her.
Oh, wait for it.
Really? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, this is... I could comfortably say that even with the maple tapping episode, which you think is like the highlight of what the shit is going on here, that you have literally seen nothing yet.
Wow. Well, this episode is also reminding me the most of Vampire Diaries, if only okay. because, and I know, I don't think you've seen Vampire Diaries,
nope.
But every, I think like for the first 2.5 seasons or so, it is a great show. Then things start going off the rails. But the thing is, almost every episode of Vampire Diaries, there's some sort of, like, celebration or party or some kind of ball. Like, this, the town, like, the little town they live in has, like, the most historic founders events of any small New England town you can possibly imagine. Like, every week there seems to be a different sort of, like, masked this or pumpkin that or you know, prom, formal, whatever. And I just look, I see the maple tapping
yeah.
one. And before that, there was the baby shower one. I'm like, okay,
right.
I'm starting to enjoy this.
There's a thing, and I'm not going to tell you where it happens so that it will still surprise you, but there's a thing in an episode of Archie coming up where they start using like the big music swell, and everyone, you know, it's like, oh my god, we have to get to X place.
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing, and they do it like 3 or 4 times in a row with like just like a minute or so in between, and like half of them are fake outs, but you're never
nice.
Sure if the next one will be, and it's one of the most amazing uses of the trope I've seen.
Oh, that's
because you just start laughing like the second or third time it happens, you're like, holy shit, can we get like a minute and a half of downtime? Because like I think one of them like happens, and then they have this minute and a half of like, well, at least now everything is and then the alarms go off, you know, it's just like
nice.
I am convinced they were playing it at least half for laughs in that sense, you know.
Yeah, there's that edge of like, well, there's an edge of camp to Riverdale. It's but there's an exquisite control over tone, which is
yeah.
one of like, I mean, it's one of the most tricky and delicate things that show pulls off, and I'm
right.
always amazed. So my question is now, I don't want to know who the killer is, but when the killer was revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised? Was it a satisfying reveal? What's your thoughts?
It was. It's a more complex reveal than you think.
Okay.
Which was nice, because I thought it would just be like, oh, it's Jim. Like, and that's it.
Right.
It's one of these, like, once you start getting toward the reveal, you start getting all of these, no, there's actually a whole complex thing going on here.
Hmm.
And it's way more than you think. And then the actual killer is like, holy crap. it was one of those moments. Like, it was actually really well played. It was reminiscent of Veronica Mars' early days.
Ah, okay.
Just nice. In that, like, there's actually 6 things going on, and you've only been looking at one, because without that one piece, you know, when you have that one piece, everything else suddenly drops into place.
Right.
but you can't pull the threads together until you actually figure out this one piece. But you keep thinking you can. And it's just, it's really well played.
I thought maybe there'd be like a...
And where the show is going, because that's fascinating.
Oh, nice.
Because again, they used the last episode to kind of do the, here's some of the fallout, and also admit, like, we're not going to be done with the fallout for, you know, ever. Because of reasons, and also this is where the show is headed, and you're just like, holy crap.
Wow, okay.
This is interesting.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to this. I thought maybe it would be like a CW crossover, and like, you know, Oliver Queen would show up and say, Jason Blossom, you have failed this town.
You failed the city. Thunk.
Just arrows him and leaves. Yeah. You know.
So Arrow, in a little teeny note of things that neither you or I care about, but a lot of fans do, and I feel bad for laughing at this, but I'm going to laugh at it.
Okay.
With the understanding that, like, if I was someone who cared, I would actually probably be upset.
Fair enough.
So they've had a mystery for 5 years on this show, like one of the few little complete mysteries left, which is, why is it, like, in the first episode even, like, you pan by Deathstroke's mask with, like, an arrow pinning it to, like, a stick?
Right, yes. I saw a headline saying that this was, like, solved, but it was weirdly, weirdly flippant or something.
Okay, saying it was flippant is beyond. Okay, so here, let me blow this one for you, because it doesn't matter at all, and it's just funny.
Okay.
So we reach the point in the story where Oliver's like, he has to go back to the island because, and he gives this whole reason for it, where it's like, this way he can just get picked up and act like he was a castaway and never left, because it's A, going to be easier for his family than being like, no, I just avoided you and was all around the world, you know, solving crime for 5 years. But also that, like, you know, now he's gotten the message from his father, so he's like, okay, I have to go, you know, save my city, but it's going to be easier if everyone thinks I was just a castaway and they don't know that I'm like this specially trained asshole, so I can go off and do this stuff.
Right.
And it'll help keep my secret, and it almost makes sense. But him and Anatoly get to the island, and, like, these waves come up behind them, and Ollie looks down, he's like, what? And Anatoly's like, what is that? And he's like, it just washed back up on shore, and picks up the mask, and puts it on a stick, and just, like, also has an arrow, and just shoves it through to pin it there for no reason. And then they just walk away. That is it. It washed, like, basically the entire mystery is tides. Like...
Oh, that's awesome.
Because, I mean, you know, it was one of those things, if they realized, like, it would take, like, 6 episodes to figure out a way to do something to bring him back, even though he's supposed to be, you know, and all this bullshit. And so the only way to do it is just to, just like, you know what, we have this one unresolved bullshit thing that people want to know. Let's just clear the deck.
Right. Jesus. Fair enough. But
like,
if
I cared, it'd be so annoying.
I'm just like, now I'm going to watch this episode. They're going to go back to the frickin' island.
It's all right.
Yes. I'm just tired of that island.
Yeah, no, me too. The episode was pretty good. Again, it's all right.
So more fathers and sons drama, I guess.
Of course. More Prometheus, more everything.
Sorry, and when you say Prometheus, I just involuntarily think of the Ridley Scott film, Alien Covenant's coming up, and I'm just like, so they sit around and watch Prometheus?
that's actually the entire plot of the episode. They're like, hey, let's watch Prometheus. That's why this guy's so angry and trying to kill everyone, because he's like, no one likes this movie but me!
Or maybe that's actually what happens when he ties down, like he imprisons Oliver again and says, this time I will break you, and he puts on Prometheus and just leaves the room.
There you go.
Yeah,
I actually kind of like the movie Prometheus, but I like it for the reason that everyone else hates it in a weird way.
I remember we had this conversation.
Yeah. I just view it as a whole bunch of fuck-ups.
Yes, exactly. But I mean,
I do enjoy a film of watching the fuck-ups die.
Yeah, that's actually the way it actually makes it. Yeah, because I mean, you watch it, and it's like a bunch of like scientists, whatnot. And you're like, wait a minute, they're just, when you realize they're just screw-ups, the whole thing makes
terrible.
A lot more sense.
It's a lot easier to swallow.
Yes.
But anyway, so yeah. Then there was, you know, there was yet another good Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that had possibly the best moment of the series. Like, good enough that I finished watching the episode and instantly sat down and just mailed you, like, oh my god, have you seen this yet? Because holy shit, moment. And you instantly knew exactly what moment I meant.
Well, the funny thing was
flipping out.
I thought it was going to be one of those things where I would like sort of mention the moment that I liked, and you'd be like, "No, it was like this other moment when you did this like weird random thing that only somebody who's read like you know this particular issue of comics would know." And I was like, "Oh, I got it right." But yeah,
for me, it's almost never like the little like weird comic implant things are fun.
Yeah,
but they're never like my reason for existence. You know, it's like they're okay.
Yeah.
But no, it's just acting wise. Oh my God, Ada losing her shit because it's what the show called for.
Yeah,
and I was really afraid because you could see it coming. That entire build up, you know, because you have Gemma listening in, and you have them talking about like one true love, and you're like, okay, this has to go sideways, and it won't ever go sideways to where he's, you know, to where Fitz is like, yeah, no, fuck Gemma, you know, just whatever.
Yeah.
So you realize like this is coming, and there are any number of ways they could go. And I don't know about you, but I was really worried that they'd play it kind of small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just kind of ordinary and just be like, yeah, no, it's very sad, but I understand now because I'm human. Or whatever bullshit thing that they didn't do, thankfully. Instead of just having Ada go full on fucking horror movie. It was... Oh, that was glorious.
Well, yeah, and it was funny because I was like, I don't want... like. Ada to try and destroy the world because she's just like super jealous over Fitz and Simmons. I'm like, no, actually, this is working really well.
Yeah.
I'm like, because it just, and I think a lot of this comes down to Mallory Jansen being able to play in that character. Just playing like, because she's dealing with like all these like initial emotions and sensations, and she just does not know how to handle them. And
yeah.
There we go. She's just suddenly like, and of course the other penny drops, as they say, and which I was kind of waiting for, and I couldn't figure out why they hadn't brought this out yet. When Fitz sort of says, "You don't get it. You know, it's not. She has other inhuman powers." I'm like, "Well, of course she does," but they played that incredibly well too. And it's holy shit.
Until then, like, I thought it was just still Darkhold stuff.
Okay.
And it wasn't until they were just like, no, she's in human powers. Like, oh, when they were like, oh, we did all these experiments, it was like, oh, fuck me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, like,
but I love the army kind of being like, okay, well, everyone in S.H.I.E.L.D. is under arrest because you might be robots. And Fitz kind of runs to the base going, no, we're all going to die, we're all going to die, we're all going to die. Like, and then people just dropping.
There was a tonally weird moment, but it was like all on its own. It was really funny when Talbot says to Coulson, it's like, how can you explain this to me? He's like, oh, I can try. And then there's other stuff and they cut back. And then.
Yes. There's no other way to do that.
And then she came back as a human. And she's like, you expect us to believe that? It was like, yeah, that's a pretty implausible story.
I did like, because it's easy to forget how long the actual May was out of commission.
Yeah, that was really weird. I just, when I realized that, I'm like, my God, like she hasn't, like the actual character hasn't been around for, you know.
Right, the entire like last pawn.
Yeah. I was like, so there's all these moments that I think of as happening with May. I'm like, no, that was Robot May. Or that was her LMD May. Yeah, no, that was they played that a lot of that really well. And I mean, it's funny when I think about that, is a lot of that episode is just people standing around in small rooms talking, which can work, and it's like it seemed like they managed to take something like a very sort of, on many cases, kind of a cramped and claustrophobic episode, and sort of give it just some depth just by dint of some good editing and some really good acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is the place to stop for a minute and discuss the fact that, you know, there are some renewals that the last the upfronts happened. So S.H.I.E.L.D., although it was questionable, has its season 5, which they've actually earned for once.
Yes.
And iZombie has its season 4.
And Timeless has a new season.
Well, we'll get to Timeless, but I do think Deadeye Zombie having season 4 is that sign that if it's holding steady in the ratings, it will be that kind of shorter season, mid-season placed show that can last as long as they want to.
Yeah.
Which is great. And we do have to actually circle back and talk about iZombie this week, because, yeah.
How long is the season for iZombie?
I think it's like 16, 19,
yeah.
Somewhere there.
Okay. Because I'm never quite sure with iZombie. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure either.
But we will talk about iZombie. Yeah, no, I'm
but, yeah, no, Timeless was then canceled.
That's great. I mean, cue the time travel jokes.
Oh, I think it's 13 episodes again, like the first season.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't mind the shorter seasons, and I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, when you get sort of like this last minute reprieve, you don't get, you know, a massive, you know, 22 episode order.
Well, but here's the thing: is that the second season was supposed to be 13, and they got a back six later.
Oh, okay.
So season 3 could still get a back six.
Right. I hope so.
You know, I'm looking at the ratings, and they have dropped from last season. So they're getting into not great territory, frankly.
Yeah. No, it's a shame. But let's hope. Hopefully.
Anyway.
Interestingly enough.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, CW did something else I thought was kind of interesting. They canceled No Tomorrow and Frequency. I've only seen like an episode of No Tomorrow, but I actually watched all of Frequency. It was on Netflix, right. And I kind of enjoyed it. But they've made like little epilogues, like little 3-minute epilogues, telling you what happened with the characters.
I think that's something we're going to start seeing more of as people want to have aftermarket for shows.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because they sort of give you a happy ending for Frequency and a really ridiculous ending for No Tomorrow, because the premise is that maybe like this asteroid is going to smash into the Earth and kill everybody. And in the epilogue, it turns out, yes, the asteroid hit the Earth, but it just killed a couple of cows in a field. Which I was like, that seems in keeping with the show that I saw.
That's why it was canceled. and speaking of canceled, of course, so Timeless was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was kind of sad. I've been playing the cancellation renewal math in my head type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it was first on the bubble, I'm like, well, we got the Good Place. And if we have to have the Good Place and sacrifice Timeless, not that this actually happens this way at all, because they're not even on the same network. But, actually, they are. But, you know, again, that's not the math. Just, you know, cosmic math, basically. Like, I'm okay with it. And then, you know, iZombie gets its renewal, and I'm like, well. And then Timeless gets canceled. I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm okay with the cosmic math on that. 3 days later, apparently NBC decided, fuck it. And decided to uncancel Timeless and give them 10 episodes. No one knows when they're going to air in 2018, but they're going to air. Original thought was summer, and it might be some other time now.
Right. But who knows? But
yeah, really weird.
Hey, if we get more of Abigail Spencer and Malcolm Barrett, that's cool with me.
Yeah, I just like that. It's a really weird situation. Like, I can't think of a time where it's really just happened that way.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen things like where networks will relent or like it'll be shopped to another network or something.
Right.
Like Airwolf.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went to Airwolf, but yeah, that happens.
But yeah, no, it's, you know, and Kripke and all this were talking when they got canceled, if they're going to try shopping to another network, but it's a long shot. And apparently somewhere along the line, NBC was like, yeah, so we hear you have the show. We'd be interested in buying. It's like, but you have the show. And they're like, yeah, but we'd like to maybe do this show. It's like, but you did, and you canceled it. Yeah, but the show sounds interesting, so why don't we do like 10 episodes and try? It's like, but you guys just, you know what, fine. That's how I feel that went.
That's great. Like some network exec was like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, shit, we canceled this, didn't we? Oh, well, too late now. No, it's great though. I like seeing, yeah. One of the things about television, I mean, in this day and age, I mean, people talk about peak TV and prestige drama, but they don't talk about much about the fact just how weird everything is getting. With planning shows and programming. Like once you start getting streaming models, then almost everything kind of goes up in the air. So right. So we're going to see more strange effects in the near future, I think.
And I think also that, like, because of streaming and, you know, DVD sales and everything, we're A, see more epilogues.
Yes.
B, see more, like, short season GIFs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole, like, well, we were going to cancel, but we'll give it, like, 5 episodes, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think they realize that, like, again, there is that aftermarket for, like, 10 years from now, people will still stream it, but not if they don't have a complete set. Not if there's no ending. If it cuts off too abruptly, they won't, and you're killing your aftermarket.
Mm.
And I think that aftermarket is huge now.
Yes.
In a way that it never has been before in history for TV.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
But it also means that they can more easily and freely cancel a show early. Because if it's not working, and they go, well, you know what, you're only going to get the second season, but we'll tell you in time to wrap up stuff, that there's still people who are going to be like, oh, did you ever see this show? You know?
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to get a second season of American Gods.
They already did.
Yes. Okay. I'm not surprised.
No, but that's coming back. Riverdale's coming back, obviously.
Nice. Did you see it, the second episode
of American Gods?
Yeah. Yes. I did. I liked the second episode more than the first.
I have a problem with American Gods. It's paced really badly.
Yeah, it's it is.
And, you know, if you give me Orlando Jones going to the top of his game, or you give me Ian McShane just eating fries, I will happily watch your show regardless of pacing, and because they're just so good.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that they can't be in every scene.
And right now
there's not quite enough there to keep you going.
Yeah, I think, right now we've got, like, Ricky Whittle as Shadow Moon going, what's going on? But, I mean, having him go, what's going on, is only going to last for so long.
Yeah.
Because right now he's just sort of playing him as sort of kind of angry and sort of like, well, whatever. But I think we're going to get more. I actually really like Ricky Whittle. He was in the first few seasons of The 100. So he's a familiar face returning. That opening scene with Orlando Jones was pretty grand, I thought.
I think it's a good show.
Yeah.
You know, I will watch the entire first season. There's like 20 minutes I want to cut out of every episode so far.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny, when I was watching, I think, the first episode, I was like, this show better have Peter Stormare in it, or there's no point. Very next episode. Oh, of course, there he is. Because this is a show that's tailor-made for, like, someone of, like, I thought, yeah, he's going to play some sort of, like, crazed god. And
right. The thing is, I don't know much of the casting, but I'm like, every great older character actor in existence needs to show up here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Riverdale thing with, like, 80s stars. You know, it's like,
yes. Oh, and also, I mean, seriously, Gillian Anderson as Lucille Ball, Media, or Lucille Ball, or Lucy,
Media.
Media. She was great. I did not realize that was Gillian Anderson at first. I just thought it was somebody who was doing a really good job of doing a Lucille Ball. And even not really that. I mean, just playing that right mixture of imperiousness and knowingness, it was just fantastic.
Yeah. You know, that was a lot of fun.
I think the American Gods is going to be, just we're saying, there's going to be lots of great performances, lots of interesting bits, but
it's interesting to watch. There were good performances from certain people, and there's a lot of it that's a goddamn slog.
Yeah. I think that's,
and I
that's
think I had more patience for that when I was watching Westworld than I do with American Gods, if only because in between we had Legion, who got it right.
Yes, very much.
You know, that whole new sense of they're not puzzle box shows. They're these slow moving, important adult dramas that kind of have taken over. You know, Stranger Things did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could trace this back to different scopes, but there is that feeling. And most of them, again, the pacing is off just because they're hard to do.
Yeah.
And that's just having Legion, the downside is that it makes you all go, oh, well, it's not that now. Okay.
This is true, yeah. Legion kind of, it's a lot of Legion just kind of hit a standard that's frankly just very, very tough to manage, to live up to. Speaking of Legion, though, I've also been watching Noah Hawley's other show, Fargo.
Yes, which I never got into. I never actually started watching Fargo.
It's I think it's a bit divisive, especially when you first start watching it, because your tolerance for seeing somebody else mimic Coen Brothers tropes, kind of, like, you're either going to have patience for it or you're not. And it's right. The second season is a much more confident and interesting piece of work. That it doesn't feel like mimicry, but it feels like a subtle homage. But it tells its own stories, and there's also a sense that Hawley is trying to. There's just two shows in Fargo. I'll put it this way, there's a sense that Hawley is telling a larger story with these interconnected pieces, and there's also the show that's just basically people who like the Coen Brothers and can say, oh, that was like a serious man. Or, hey, that bit was just like, you know.
Right.
There will be blood. Not there will be blood. What am I talking about? I know Country for Old Men. Oh, I'd like to see a P.T. Anderson series. Not by P.T. Anderson, but like a whole bit, like just
right.
taken from P.T. Anderson bits. Yeah. That would amuse me to no end. But yeah, though this season feels a little more cartoonish than the last season, but I tell you, there was an episode, not the most recent one, but the one before, in which the main character, a no-nonsense and likable Minnesota policewoman, goes to Los Angeles to track down the history of a suspect. And it is one of the best hours of television I think I've ever seen. It was Noah Hawley and crew just firing on all of those cylinders that people like to fire on.
Nice.
So
it's one of the shows I keep meaning to. I just, who has time? I don't have time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm still watching like the second six or so episodes of The Get Down. For God's sake, I think I've only gotten through two of them.
Yeah, no, I'm just sort of it's. I sort of started it, and then I'm like, oh, I have something to do. I have some toast to make. Or one of the things that people do in this day and age, like make toast, and off I run.
Like make toast.
Yeah.
Making toast is important.
Yeah, for a good vegan breakfast. Toast and jam.
Yeah, so...
Unless there's pectin. Ah, never mind. Toast and jam is not vegan. All right, moving on from things that are not...
good lord. Yeah, no, stuff and things. Stuff and things. there was a Doctor Who this week?
There was a Doctor Who this week. The title escapes me. But another abandoned or mostly abandoned space station episode of Doctor Who, which always, it always seems to be its own sort of little genre, and always with you never know what you're going to get when you get like an old abandoned space station episode or abandoned ship episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah. I did like that this felt very much classic Who, more than Moffat Who, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yes, very much.
A nice one-off episode that played with the horror aspects of stuff, it played with the science aspects of stuff. It made very little sense if you stop and think about it.
this is like a lot of Doctor Who episodes.
Well, right, I don't mean that as a thing. It's very Doctor Who.
It's like they're not, those people aren't coming to rescue you, they're your replacements. I'm like, why would they be, why, like, it seems to me like this place is being shut down along with all the people in it. Why would they be replacements? What are you talking about?
Because the suits can only do simple stuff.
I guess so. But if they're not, if the people aren't profitable. Why would other people?
Well, no, those people weren't profitable because they said their production slacked off.
Okay, so they're basically screw ups. Okay, I get. Fair enough.
Yeah, so the entire this was possibly the most anti-capitalist Doctor Who moment I've ever seen in my life.
Oh
mind
my
you.
God! Yeah, just throw that into the Battle of Seattle for a dated reference. Yes, yeah. This was Occupy Space Station, or whatever you like. Yeah, the notion of the licensed oxygen, I thought was great, but also I mean, there was I think another sort of subtler critique embedded in there about our own sort of the devices we use and the fact that often most of what we use on them is not ours but is licensed in the form of the suit itself.
Right. Which well, this is the John Deere thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And just for listeners who don't know that one, John Deere, now that they have, their tractors use very complicated computer systems in them. They're not just an engine, because that's your car does the same thing. John Deere has basically your user agreement says that you don't actually own the tractor, even though you've bought it. And right. You can't make repairs to it. You can't change the software. You can't do any of that.
And there's an entire DRM.
Right. And apparently there's an entire underground set of sites about hacking your tractors and exploits for the software to get them to do what you want and be able to fix them and all this. It's like based in Ukraine that a whole bunch of farmers use. It's gone a little insane. It's very William Gibson. But yeah, this is literally happening now. That farmers don't own that legally, and this is being fought. But right now, they don't own their own tractors because the software is licensed. And without the software, the tractor doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. There's really nothing more William Gibson or maybe Walter John Williams than anarcho hacking collectives of Ukrainian tractor operators.
Right. Isn't that just magical? But yeah, no, I mean, I think it's Deere who is, in fact, arguing in court that you don't own the things that you buy.
Right.
Which is an insane sentence.
I know. It is. That
makes no logical sense. You cannot say that sentence and go oh, yeah, that I get it.
that doesn't violate everything all the ways we've been, the way we've been raised to think of property,
Right. Well, I mean, this happened, frankly, this was tried by movie studios a number of times, starting with VHS tapes, when they're saying that, legally, even if you buy the VHS tape, you can't copy it for personal use. Obviously, you can't copy it and resell it. It's like if you buy a book, you can't, copy it out by hand or retype it and sell it for money. That's not a thing. And that's fair. that is legally fair to me. That makes sense.
That does make sense.
But the idea that, if you buy a book, you can't resell it or just whatever, or again, if you have a book, you can't retype it in larger print and print it out to read it yourself. You're not selling it,
right?
But you're making a copy for your own usability. If you have a VHS tape that you watch a lot, maybe you want to make a copy of it because it'll wear out the tape,
for example. You want a backup. I mean, this is
right. And this happened with CDs and DVDs. This keeps happening. And it keeps getting struck down.
Mm-hmm.
As, of course, this is legal. What are you, insane? But now we have tractor companies trying it. It's like, I just don't even know what to do with that.
Yeah, that starts to get kind of bizarre. But that's, like you say, this is a thing in this episode of Doctor Who. We've got licensed suits, licensed everything, and these people own nothing. And it turns out they don't even seem to really own their own lives, because those two can just be taken away.
Right. I mean, and again, it's, over in England, there are certain jobs that they're forcing you to pay for uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
That you're required to have this for your job, but you have to pay for it yourself.
Yes.
And that's always an interesting problem. I mean, and again, it's not that it's new, but it's always been an interesting problem, and this episode of Doctor Who takes it to an absurd place on purpose.
Yes.
Because that's how you do social commentary with science fiction sometimes. You take it to an absurd place.
Yeah, and I mean, you take it, I mean, and also, this is one of these moments when you sort of remind that Doctor Who is intended to be consumed also by, a very young audience, so...
Right.
So sometimes the absurdity is kind of necessary, or at least they think it is. This also has features the worst, most groan-worthy Doctor Who line, probably since David Tennant said, "I'm not winding you up" in the sort of the classic just season two episode. Jeez, I can't remember a damn thing today.
Which
Girl
line?
in the fireplace. Girl in the
Yeah. Oh,
fireplace.
sorry. Yeah.
Well,
The with
yeah,
the wind
when
up guy.
he's
Yeah.
yeah, when he but in this one when he says, when he says that's capitalism, and then he says you're fighting the suits, and
Oh, I. When
I
he
was,
said that,
I was kind of applauding in my mind. At the same time, I was like, oh God.
when he said that, I turned to Laszlo because we were watching it together, and I said, they went a long way around just to get to that line. Because you have that like writer
Exactly.
sense where it's like there's some level of that's how they got to, oh, okay, it's the suits and all this, because they're like, they're fighting the suits. And they reverse engineered it to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's that was the feeling. There was some sort of, it was like a note or like a joke they made like in pitching it, and that's it stuck. And they're like, how do we get to this line? Oh, I know. Well, we'll just take an entire episode to do it. Also, in a different, not talking about capitalism or licensing, I also thought this one actually really sort of raised the stakes, not just with the doctor's blindness, but I was amazed at just how much hell they put Bill through.
I maintain that she is Donna.
Yeah.
She is Moffat's version of Donna in a large sense.
Very much.
In that you have to put her through the crucible so that she deeply understands what the Doctor deals with.
Right.
And I
Exactly.
think that's where that came from.
Also, the there's that moment when the doctor leaves her to be sort of what she thinks murdered by the machines, and she says, "He didn't tell me a joke," but he kind of did because he says, "I'll see you soon." But he's blind,
Yeah.
so it was like, no, it was a joke in there. You're just too scared. Just
Right.
think about it; it'll come to you. Yeah, that. But I mean, she almost dies like at least twice. I'm like, well, it was quite something for a new, especially for a new companion. Like, they're never really in that
I'm
much
trying to think, like,
danger,
Moffat,
but.
well, Moffat's done this before. I mean, he did it with Amy with the whole, his whole Angels episode.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
The
add her
one on the
like.
spaceship that has River.
Yes. Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
So it's, I mean, but it is a Doctor Who saying that he will, but I think, yeah, you're right. Like this early, it's not common.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess she gets sort of, attacked by like the wood bugs in the previous episode, but the stakes didn't feel as high for that one.
Right.
I gotta say I enjoyed that episode that the episode quite a bit. There was something, just felt like a great sort
A
of
good
like
season
bit of
so
lore.
far.
What's that?
Good season so far.
It really is just one of the most solid seasons I can recall in a
I
while.
think cutting Moffat off from being able to do a most important person in the universe, the whole universe is at stake thing, cutting him off from that has freed him up to be the old Doctor Who writer he was.
Yes.
And not that he's writing all these episodes, because he's not, but it's still, showrunner-wise, a lot of that tone comes from him.
And I, but you can tell there are certain things that are still very Moffat-y. I think he's directed all of the writers to say, for your premise or for the seed for the episode, think of something that scared the crap out of you as a kid, or just some sort of weird formative childhood memory.
Well, I mean,
Some
that's
like,
Doctor Who, right?
yeah. I mean, but it's very much, I mean, it's a very Moffat-y sort of take on Who,
Yeah.
more so than, say, Davies. Yeah.
He's the
That's,
Pixar of Doctor Who.
he is the Pixar of Doctor Who. If only Pixar were still the Pixar of Pixar.
I don't I how are they not?
Well, for example, they've spun off into like the the Planes movies. You know,
those have always been outliers, though. I mean, but there's always been core Pixar thing.
Yeah.
I feel like Cars has always just been like a weird offshoot that went horribly wrong.
Yeah. I think, aside from Inside Out, I'm not sure that they've had, like, it just seems like their output of, like, maybe after seeing stuff like, you know, Ratatouille, Up, WALL-E, maybe asking for, like, that kind of output of great stuff is asking
Incredibles.
A bit much.
Yeah.
Incredibles.
I think if you get one every, like, 4 or 5 years, that's still a really good track record.
That really is. Like, Inside Out, for example, was still really good. So perhaps I've been spoiled by Pixar.
Maybe. Speaking of spoiled by and not Pixar, but Disney, which is the same thing, was in the mall yesterday, just passing through type of thing, looking for something, and stopped by the Disney store because they were having a sale, and sometimes they have cool shit, and mostly they don't, but it could be fun to look. And they had their Guardians 2 display up, and they had the most accidentally ill-advised bit of merchandise I have seen yet for Guardians 2.
Ooh.
That I swear to God, they did not realize the problem.
Okay.
It's a journal that is made to look on the front like it's Groot's face.
Oh, my God. Like,
wait, paper is made of what? Oh, God, they've pulped Groot's brain, and now they want you to write on it.
My God.
I don't think they made that last step.
No, I don't think they did either.
But, whoops.
I also like the fact that if you think of, like, Groot's face, like, say, stretched out on the cover of a book, it looks a whole lot like the Evil Dead's Necronomicon.
It kind of did.
Which...
It really kind of did. If you just, while we keep talking... Just go to Google and you know, listeners, feel free to do this. Type in Groot Journal. And it will be like the first thing up on like shopping and images will be this book.
Oh my God. You are correct. That is like the friendly Necronomicon. Jesus Christ. Why? That's insane.
Although it does set up for our fabulous Ash versus the Evil Guardians show.
I'm just... What is the... Is that a bookmark? Like,
yes, there's a removable bookmark that is like a leaf.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little odd.
A little grim.
Yeah, there's somebody who's actually like taken a picture of it like on the shelves. And yeah, it really... Jesus Christ. That's gruesome.
I almost bought one just for the horrificness of it.
Yeah.
It's like I told you the worst ever Inside Out merchandise, which Laszlo found at a store once. It is the best and worst Funko Pop ever created by Man or Beast.
Tell us.
It is, and again, it's an Inside Out thing, but it's Bing Bong.
Mm-hmm.
But he's see-through because he's disappearing.
Hey.
And we were at a convention and Laszlo found this thing and bought it, and we were showing it to like any one of our friends who came by the table, and it's like, look at this thing, and everyone just kind of recoiled in terror and just like sat, just like, oh my God, why would you do that? It was, I mean, just worth the price of admission alone just for that moment.
Christ. Yeah, that's not the best merchandising.
That's some grim-ass shit.
I know.
Apparently now Funko's doubled down on it. And you know the little Dorbs line? That I personally am not fond of, but... Funko does this line called Dorbs with a Z that's like little round... Like they're like little snowmen almost.
Oh, right, yeah.
They did a vanishing fucking Bing Bong for that one, too.
Oh, my God.
And like I said, part of me loves it because it's just the most messed up thing you could possibly figure out how to do.
Oh my God, yes.
Can you imagine the conversation? Like, how do we get the children to cry? what do we do today, folks? How do we do this?
Oh, like what? So why don't they just put out like shot Bambi's mother or something?
Right.
Like, you know, just in a heap bleeding. It's just Christ. Maybe with a hunter's foot on Bambi's
Please
mother's
note, by
neck.
The way, for the record, that Bambi, the hunter who shoots Bambi is the only Disney villain that actually works for their goal, that achieves their goal.
Good point.
And is the only Disney villain that you can find zero merchandise ever in life for.
Huh. That's
There's
true.
Never going to be a stuffed hunter. There's never going to be a TV, like a t-shirt that's like, we like killing Bambi's mom. Like, this is every other every other Disney villain, you know, because they were all done later, and like even like the evil witch in Snow White, you know, had right. a personality. The hunter, of course, it doesn't really exist except as a force of nature.
Yes.
So I kind of understand it, but it's just funny to me that like the only one to actually ever pull it off is this one hunter, and you will never be able to buy that shit.
Disney's most successful and least visible villain.
Yep. You never think about that one, do you?
No. No, that's true. Huh. Very well. Well, I think I see a lucrative line of merchandise until until the cease and desist letter comes.
Right. They just really is a Winchester and deal with it.
Oh, you know, actually, there's. I just remembered there's a comedy troupe. They're not around anymore. A Canadian comedy troupe called the Frantics. They had a show called Four on the Floor in the 80s.
Okay.
And one of the things they do, they have songs, and there's one song they sang is "I Shot Bambi's Mother," and it's great because they do it live. But they don't. It's not like sort of you think of it as all, when you think of that, you'd think of like some sort of punkish "I Shot Bambi's Mother," but it's sort of the "I shot Bambi's mother. I made Bambi sad." And it's just, you have to listen to it live because once they get there, the entire audience is like, oh, they're all horrified. Yeah, I guess we shocked easier in the 80s. But it was great.
That does sound great, actually. Yes. Yes, indeed. I'm just spacey. Did not get much sleep.
Yeah, that's all right. Neither did I.
Next week, just so listeners know, there should be a podcast. There's a small chance there might not be a podcast. And I will tell you why.
I am all ears.
May 20th, next Saturday, and we record on Sundays. May 20th is World Whiskey Day.
I'm starting to see the shape of things to come.
Yeah. Now, chances are, it'll be fine.
But there's a possibility that you may not have recovered in time from World Whiskey Day.
I did last year.
Yeah, it's true.
And last year was the year where me and my friend Valentine sat on the couch blasting Prince music all night while drinking copious amounts of whiskey and then realized that Krispy Kreme delivered.
Oh, my God.
But their delivery minimum was like 18 donuts.
Oh, God.
And we were already in it when we were just like, this is a good idea. So.
Single malt and Krispy Kreme. Oh, Jesus.
This year, I'm hoping to actually, we're building a bar.
Oh.
In the house. We just have the space that needs something. And we're like, we get this bar, like, get the table, and you know, nice height, and move all the liquor there. So we'll be actually probably building the bar the night before,
huh.
and celebrate World Whiskey Day by breaking in the bar with friends. So who knows how this is going to go?
Wow, I look forward to hearing about World Whiskey Day at the Knave household.
You know, I only have two. I got stuff like, you know, oh, birthdays and oh, it's Memorial Day or whatever, Mother's Day. There are only two holidays I have in my calendar as reoccurring events that are not like normal, like, you know, holiday type things or birthdays. One is World Whiskey Day, which is the third Saturday of May every year. And the other is Rex Manning Day.
Oh.
I still celebrate.
And as well you should.
I don't know. This says way too much about me, I think. It's
I, I mean, I didn't even know there was a Rex Manning Day.
Have you never seen Empire Records?
I have, actually. It has been a while, though.
Well, because, you know, Empire Records takes place on Rex Manning Day.
That's right.
And there is an actual date given. Like, there's on the signs, there's the date, which is in April. I want to say the 7th. Let me look. 8th, I'm sorry. April 8th.
Oh, yep, here we go.
So,
Rex Manning Day. I remember, it's been a while since I've seen Empire Records.
Oh, yeah, no, so every April 8th I try to watch Empire Records if I can. Some days I don't get to, and I'll at least listen to the end song, you know, Sugar.
Yep.
I will at the very least listen to that. And yeah, and watch the video.
Right.
Because, oh, you Rexy, mustn't dwell. You're so sexy.
Not today. Not on Rex Manning Day.
So, you know, Rex Manning Day is the thing I celebrate in this household. There you go.
Hey, you can get t-shirts and everything. Man, there's a...
I would get a t-shirt, but I only wear it once a year. And I feel like I'd forget for a year, and then I'd be, like, really upset.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, we only get so many Rex Manning Days in our lifetime.
And why would you want to waste them?
Exactly. Oh, my God. See, this means that now that you've reminded me, I'm going to end up watching Empire Records on the next Rex Manning Day.
Again, I was going to remind you coming up. Yeah.
You'll have to, because I don't want to forget. And then, because I'll...
Oh. Yeah, I just put my calendar as a yearly reoccurring event. Years ago, in fact.
Oh, my God.
And some years I forget, obviously, you know, that's coming up type of thing. And it's like, I'll look at my calendar when it turns to April. I'll be like, oh, what's coming up in April? And it's like, oh, Rex Manning Day. That's right.
You know, I genuinely meant to have, like, to celebrate Reagan's death every year. But eventually that faded away.
Well, it's like the, God, I forget which movie it is now. There's one of these, like, you know, I can't even remember any of this setup now. But it's like, what's your perfect, like, summer day or spring day?
Mm-hmm.
And some, you know, April 21st. It's not too hot or not too cold. It's just a movie line. And every year, right around then, you see it, like, it pops up everywhere.
Also, Hitler's birthday.
Oh.
Fair enough. Anyway, I think I have to be running along.
Yeah, me too.
And we'll be back next week if World Whiskey Day hasn't...
We're going to be back next week. Well, I'm sure.
Cool.
I just might be a little
I too might celebrate. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get myself a glass of Highland Park 18.
Oh, okay. There you go.
A fine whiskey.
Current bottle of Hellcat that we have here.
Mm.
Which is a wonderful whiskey that is like a punch in the face. It's harsh as fuck, but... Fantastic. Anyway, we will end for now and play some music.
All right, music time. Music.